It's like the walls are caving in. Sometimes I feel like giving up, but I just can't.
You're listening to Health Center in the Catskills on WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains. I'm Diana Mason, the host of this program, and I want to share with people that I have a friend who I've discovered was walking around with a very high blood pressure. And I wanted my friend to go to the emergency room, and my friend didn't want to go to the emergency room. I was able to get my friend in to see a primary care provider the next day. But what I tried to impress upon this person was that you're at high risk for stroke, but chronically having this blood pressure be high is doing damage to other parts of your body. You must take this seriously. And I don't think my friend had a real understanding of what the numbers on the blood pressure meant and how serious this was. And so I have a colleague who I wanted to bring on today to help me to talk with the community about what blood pressure is about, why we need to pay attention to it, and how do we think about what our blood pressure reading is. Dr. Don Acock is a professor at the School of Nursing at Georgia State. Did I get that right? Georgia State University, Dawn?
Correct.
Thank you. She is also a cardiovascular and stroke nurse scientist who's been doing fabulous work around particularly working with African American men to counsel them on preventing their blood pressures from being out of control, preventing stroke, actually. And I have to say, Dawn, first of all, thank you so much for joining me today on Health Center in the Catskills.
It's an honor to be here and talk with you today.
Well, I want to say that I actually was stunned when I read that your focus was on African Americans who are between the ages of 20 and 35. Can you say a little bit about that? That was really stunning for me. And I don't think most people who are younger think about that they are at risk for hypertension and stroke.
You're correct. So we know that stroke can occur at any age, but it's typically a disease of older adults. And the risk for stroke increases as we age because of the wear and tear on our bodies. And over time, our blood vessels become stiffer and narrower, which makes it easier for blood clots to form or for our vessels to break in the brain, which causes stroke. But we also know that conditions like high blood pressure, diabetes, and high cholesterol also occur as we age, and those contribute to stroke if they're not controlled. But what I have seen and what we've seen over the past decade is an increase in stroke in younger people. Mm. And it's because of these conditions that we're seeing earlier in life. People are developing high blood pressure, diabetes, obesity in their 20s and 30s and having stroke. Mm. And these are things that we can control, these diseases. But there's other conditions that, you know, we can't control that increases our risk.
So let's talk a little bit about what a blood pressure represents. So most people know you get two numbers, a top number and a bottom number. What's the top number? What's the bottom number?
So high blood pressure is a leading cause of stroke. About half of strokes that occur as a result of high blood pressure. So it's important to know the numbers, and blood pressure control is key. So to know your blood pressure, whether or not it's controlled, you need to know these numbers. So the first number is called your systolic blood pressure, and it's the pressure in your heart when it's actually pumping or beating. And we want that number to be less than 120. Mm. And the second or the bottom number is the diastolic pressure, and that's the pressure in your heart when it's actually relaxed or it's between beats. And we want that number to be less than 80. So the goal is less than 120 over 80. because when your blood pressure is consistently above these numbers, your heart has to work harder, which contributes to that wear and tear on your blood vessels that I talked about.
So let me ask you, some years ago, I want to say it was probably 10 years or so ago, there was some talk about for older people, a higher blood pressure can be tolerated, higher like around 140, because of some of the resistance in the blood vessels and making sure that the blood's able to get pumped through the brain in particular, but other parts of the body too. Is that still the thinking?
It can be, but everyone is different. And so I would suggest for the individual older adults that do have high blood pressure, it's important to have that conversation with your healthcare provider to determine whether or not you are on the correct or the best medications for you, and whether your blood pressure readings where they are, those medications you can be taken off of them, or they may need adjustments, you know, to go lower. But definitely that's a question that you would have for your provider, because it would depend on other conditions that you may have as well.
Great. So tell us about why stroke is associated with high blood pressure.
Yeah, so stroke is associated with high blood pressure because of that wear and tear that I talked about. When you have high blood pressure, that increased pressure makes the blood vessels that carry blood to your brain become stiffer and narrower, which makes it easier for blood clots to form or for the vessels to break, which, you know, we have what's called ischemic stroke, and that is when a blood clot forms in your brain and blocks the blood flow, which causes a stroke. And then we also have what's called a hemorrhagic stroke, and that's when a blood vessel in the brain becomes weakened and burst. So either types of strokes can be deadly and cause disability. And if we think of the heart as, for example, a water hose, and it's turned on, you know, really high, over time that water pressure will weaken the hose and cause cracks to form. And again, that can lead to blood clot formation or to weakened vessels, causing a stroke if that were to, you know, occur in the brain.
Yes. And so there's this other aspect, though, that if you're having a stroke, to get to an emergency room within a very short period of time because of a clot buster medication that could be given to break up a clot, if that's the cause of the stroke, is there any difference in terms of if your stroke is from, how do they know that your stroke is from the clot and not from busting a blood vessel and bleeding into the brain?
That's a great question. So either type of stroke, it's important to get to the hospital in a timely manner in order to get the right treatment. So when individuals experience symptoms of a stroke, whether that's facial droop, arm weakness, slurred speech, calling 911, getting to the nearest hospital is important. Whether it's an ischemic stroke or a hemorrhagic stroke, there is a treatment available, but time, what the saying is, time is brain, because it depends on the type of stroke that you have that they can determine what is the best treatment for the individual that's having a stroke.
And you just mentioned some of the symptoms that people should be alert for. Do you want to go over those again? What should people think about if they're having these symptoms, that you don't wait around, you get yourself to an emergency room, not driving yourself, but having somebody drive you or calling 911, right?
Exactly. I'll add that there are some places that have ambulances that can initiate, you know, the treatment for a stroke. And so, again, it's important to call 911, not only to get there in a good amount of time, a prompt time, but also because they can initiate that treatment on board. And so the acronym to use that so that you can remember the symptoms of a stroke is called FAST. And F stands for face, and that when you have a droop on one side of the face, or you can see it in the mouth or the lips. A is for arm, and that's weakness on one side. It could be in your arm, or you could also see it in your leg. And then S is for speech. You have slurred speech or garbled speech. And the T is for time, to remind you that the importance of time and calling 911 and getting to the nearest emergency room for treatment.
Great. FAST, F-A-S-T. Face, facial drooping, arm weakness or leg weakness, speech slurred or garbled, and time, getting attention fast. So that is stroke. And I want to talk about the impact of high blood pressure on other body systems. What other effects does hypertension have on the body?
Yeah, so when the heart has to work harder to move blood through the body, the blood vessels throughout your body are affected. They become weak and damaged, which can lead to problems in the heart, like heart failure or a heart attack. It can damage blood vessels in the kidneys, where you can get chronic kidney disease. And if that is over a period of time, you can end up in end-stage renal disease and require dialysis, where individuals have to go to a dialysis clinic 2 to 3 times a week and hooked up to a machine to have their blood cleansed. The eyes can be affected as well. You can have vision loss because we have blood vessels in our eyes as well. And so that's why we encourage individuals with hypertension or high blood pressure to get regular eye exams. And another way it can harm the brain is through memory loss or the development of vascular dementia or Alzheimer's disease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's sort of scary, too. So you... For people who have a family history of hypertension or a family history of strokes, and they don't know your blood pressure, what do you tell them?
Yeah, having a family history is also, it's one of those risk factors for hypertension as well as for stroke. So the more people in your family who have hypertension, the greater your risk of developing it. And my advice, you know, for individuals that don't know their blood pressure is to know your numbers. Hypertension is known as the silent killer because often there are no warning signs or symptoms. So it's important to know what your readings are, regardless of having a family history or not, but even more so if you do have a family history. And so getting your blood pressure checked regularly, the recommendation from the American Heart Association is to get your blood pressure checked at least once a year. I recommend twice a year for those that are at higher risk. And, you know, you can get your blood pressure checked a lot of different places, at your healthcare provider's office, of course, but also there may be blood pressure machines in the grocery store. You can go to a fire station, pharmacy. Some churches and community centers will have blood pressure machines or individuals that will check your blood pressure as well. And then also, you know, your available pharmacies or local Walmart have blood pressure monitors that you can purchase and have, you know, in your own home that cost around $40 to $50 on the low end.
And let me just share that about 25 or 30 years ago, I do have a family history of heart disease and of hypertension. 25 or 30 years ago, I was at a nursing conference and I developed a headache at night that wouldn't go away, and I don't get headaches. And I took ibuprofen. It didn't touch it. And I was feeling awful. And the hotel had somebody that they were able to send to my room. They checked my blood pressure. It was sky high. And it alerted me to the fact that I have an issue. It's in my family. I need to pay attention to this and do something about it. And I got on medication right away. I was working on weight loss, working on exercising, etc. But I also bought my own blood pressure self-monitor. I had always had a blood pressure cuff and stethoscope, but it's too hard to use that on yourself. And they now have great cuffs that you can slip on your arm, push a button. It takes your blood pressure and tells you what the reading is. So I'm someone who really endorses the idea of monitoring your blood pressure. And I used to do research on human rhythms, circadian rhythms. And I know that you want to take it at a consistent time of day, that your blood pressure will vary depending upon time of day. And you should write it down and then take it to your primary care provider. But I have a question for you about state fairs. We are in state fair season. Everybody, fairs and other kinds of outdoor events, markets, street fairs. And often you will see somebody sitting at a table taking blood pressures. And I have some concerns about what happens when that blood pressure is taken, and whether the person, if they have a high blood pressure, whether they're getting referrals. If somebody who's listening goes to one of these street fairs or the state fair and gets their blood pressure checked, what would be the signal that they need to get help now? They need to not wait. How high would it need to be?
Yeah, so that number that is very concerning, that requires immediate attention, you know, even going to the emergency room for attention, is a reading of 180 over 120 or higher. Mm-hmm. And typically with numbers that are that high, your risk for stroke skyrockets. But and typically when it reaches this number, you may start to have symptoms like you shared, and thank you for sharing that story, that example. Mm. Headache, vision changes, confusion. But my hope is that when at these state fairs and other outdoor events, that even numbers lower than that, 140, you know, over 80, 140 over 90, that referrals are taking place and yes. People acting on that.
Yeah. I think these days it's irresponsible for somebody to be doing, have a blood pressure table and not have, be ready to make the referrals that are needed. So I want to spend a little bit of time just talking about the work that you have done. You've designed an intervention that you call SCORE, Stroke Counseling for Risk Reduction. What are some, tell us about this intervention and some of the points that you think are relevant for this rural community that is hearing this radio program.
Absolutely. So thanks for asking about that. When I think about SCORE, which stands again for Stroke Counseling for Risk Reduction, three key takeaways from that are three A's, and that's awareness, accuracy, and action. And so the goal is to increase overall awareness of stroke, to understand what it is and why it's a problem. We know it's the fourth leading cause of death. And the leading cause of adult disability in the United States. Mm. Second is to increase accuracy of perceived stroke risk. Research, including my own, shows that many people don't think that they're at risk of stroke, even though they may have risk factors. They may underestimate their risk. And I see this particularly among young adults at risk. That's where I focus. And this is a problem because if you don't think you're at risk of stroke, you're going to be less likely to engage in activities that will lower your risk of stroke. Mm. So the counseling part of the intervention for SCORE is assessing individuals' risk of stroke and letting them know what those risk factors are. And lastly, the action piece, that is how can an individual lower their risk of stroke? And the good thing is that most strokes are preventable. About 80% of strokes can be prevented if people know what their risk factors are and they take steps in order to lower their risk. And it all starts with lifestyle behaviors, eating healthy, low-salt diet for those with hypertension, also being physically active, not smoking, cigarettes, And then also back to knowing your numbers, knowing what your blood pressure is, knowing what your blood glucose level is, what your cholesterol levels are. And if they are abnormal, taking action in order to get treatment or those lifestyle changes to lower your risk.
So what are the risk factors other than hypertension?
Great question. So again, they are hypertension, obesity, diabetes. Mm. We also, those are key, also high cholesterol. Atrial fibrillation, which is an irregular heart rhythm, increases an individual's risk for stroke. We have the lifestyle behaviors, which are eating an unhealthy diet, being physically inactive. Obesity also is a risk, as well as unhealthy sleep, you know, abnormal sleep, you know, patterns. And then there are also those risk factors that we can't change, those non-modifiable risk factors, as we talked about earlier, family history of stroke. Mm-hmm. Women are at higher risk of stroke compared to men because women live longer and also because of the hormonal changes that we experience over time. Mm-hmm. For example, pregnant women are at risk of stroke. As well. And then people who live in rural areas have a higher risk, primarily due to less access to care. And then I talked about my research, which focuses on African American or Black people, because we have twice the risk of stroke compared to other racial or ethnic groups.
You know, I'd like to ask you quickly about that. There was some thinking years ago that one of the reason why Blacks were at higher risk, African Americans were at higher risk, was because of the history of slavery and the transatlantic shipping, that they had to those who survived had to retain salt. They those who were able to retain, because they weren't hydrated adequately, they weren't fed adequately, but those who were able to retain salt remained alive. And that there may have been then genetic differences in people who actually ended up in this country from Africa. Is that still current thinking?
That is when it comes to hypertension and our affinity to sodium or salt. That is one of the key things that we talk about, and there's what's called the DASH diet, where, you know, we're encouraged to consume low-salt diets in order to prevent the development of hypertension or to better manage hypertension.
Yeah, great. So if people would like to learn more about SCORE, how could they do so?
They can do so by directly getting in touch with me. I can share my email address, dayckok at gsu.edu.
One more time?
Yes, dayckok at gsu.edu. Mm-hmm. Or they can go online and just do a search of SCORE, SCORRE. And a website will appear.
Great.
And those are two ways to learn more about SCORE and to reach me as well.
And then what's a go-to source for that you rely upon for information about hypertension and its management?
The American Heart Association has great information and resources online to learn more about hypertension as well as stroke, and also tips for better management of hypertension and ways that can lower your risk of stroke. One particular resource that I use in my own research that I would encourage, you know, your listeners to take a look at and use as well is the American Heart Association's Essential 8 program. It's a free online program. You put in information, for example, your height and weight, your most recent blood pressure reading. It'll ask you questions about physical activity, diet, as well as height and weight information and sleep information as well. you put in that information, and it will give you an overall cardiovascular risk score. And that score has been associated with heart disease as well as stroke. In addition, it'll tell you areas of, there's called the essential eight because it assesses eight factors, cardiovascular factors. And though it will give you information about what you're doing well when it comes to those factors and areas where you can improve. And then it also provides resources for how you can improve those areas that need improving.
So if you Google American Heart Association Essential 8 Program, you will find it. And that was Dr. Don Acock, professor at the School of Nursing at Georgia State University and a cardiovascular and stroke nurse scientist who I know because she was a Betty Irene Moore Nurse Innovator and Leaders Fellow, doing great work with this SCORE intervention. And Don, it's been a pleasure having you on. Thank you so much for the work you're doing.
Thank you for the invitation. I've enjoyed talking with you today and sharing more about my research and the importance of knowing about hypertension and stroke.
Come back on. All right. Have a great day, Don. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.